Yeah, that's me moving my mic around. Yeah, you know, don't you like hearing that? It's the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. A little bit of a 4th of July buzz from the weekend. Well, I guess it's not the weekend. It's, you know, when 4th of July falls in on Tuesday, comes in on Tuesday, it's a cool thing because it kind of breaks up and extends the weekend, but it just messes everything up because every day you think it's Sunday or it's Saturday or it's Friday, but then you got two more days. Anyway, who knows? Anyway, it's Thursday. We're live from New York City. Hope you had a great day. I really enjoyed the 4th of July. Everything leading up to it, all the fireworks, the buzz continues. It's just one of those weekends that just kind of lingers on because sun was endless, the humidity and the temperatures were endless, and it was a good time. Hope you enjoyed our nation's 241st birthday. And I don't think we look a day over 175. Yeah, maybe that's it. Got a great show coming your way. Crystal Woods. That name is going to be embedded into your brain because she is the true depiction of resiliency. At age 6, she became sexually abused by her father and led a life very much of turmoil for years, and then turned that all around when she had the reins and controlled her life. And she's a natural bodybuilder, and she's sitting right next to me, and she looks amazing. And she's smiling. And you have to be patient a few more minutes, Crystal, because as much as I want to get to you, there's a few things I need to get to first. But if you want to speak and call and talk to Crystal, it's 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. So when I get Crystal on the air, I got to ask her if she has a she shed. Do you know what a she shed is? A she shed, it sounds like Susie sells she sheds down the seashore. Sounds like her nursery rhyme. But a she shed is like move over man caves. This is like glamming up the backyard. It's a new trend that women are building sheds, like little women caves for themselves. They go back in their yard, and it's a little shed that either comes delivered or is made on the spot. You can buy it at Lowe's. You can buy it online. It gets delivered off a truck. Or like a little house that's, what's that called? Prefab house. So you can get your prefab she shed. This is like lighting up Pinterest. It's giving it Pinterest a lot of steam. And it's a great escape. And you know, I think it's kind of cool because why shouldn't women have the right to have their own domicile outside their domicile? Because, hey, I'm a husband. I can be a pain in the ass. I know it. So I would get away from me if I was not me. Even when I'm me, I like to get away from me. That was when all the drugs and alcohol were rampant in my life. Now I just get on a bike and ride for 50 miles or go to the gym or do something crazy like that or build, you know, furniture and shit like that to keep myself out of trouble. But anyway, the she sheds are pretty cool. They come all decked out. But they're kind of low-tech. From what I gather, women, you know, they have, and this is a generalized statement, they have all the tech inside. And the husbands have it. You know, the Xboxes, the surround sound, the big screen, ultra-big screen, the screen the size of the house. They just want a little respite to chill in, to have some good books, a really comfortable throw blanket on a couch, and maybe, you know what, let's put a loft up in the back of that she shed so I can just sneak away for a little cat nap. And you know what? Throw in a little kitty too. Why not? Because a she shed wouldn't be complete without a little kitty cat. Maybe a little kitty cat she shed door. You get it? Kelsey, what do you think? You're shaking your head. You're not a she shed type of girl, are you? You're in a man cave, aren't you? Yeah, yeah. Kelsey's operating the console here, and I didn't think she was digging the she shed concept. But you know what? I like it. Hey, whatever brings you happiness. And also, it's a great way to escape from washing those dishes and just get away from the kids who can make you pull your hair out once in a while. So no matter where you are hearing this broadcast, live or on podcast, you certainly heard about what was sitting on the beach in Island Beach State Park over the weekend. Governor Chris Christie, the beloved 15% actually of New Jerseyans beloved him, his approval rating, after closing down the state of New Jersey. And I'm not going to belabor this point, but there's just a few minor things I'd like to point out. Number one, he's an asshole. Oh, I'm sorry. That just slipped. Hold on. I got to get my glasses here because I'm a little behind schedule here. Hold on. I'm going to give you some music in the background. Okay, here's my music. I'm looking for my glasses. La-di-da-di-da-di-da-di. Oh, thanks, Kelsey. That's good. I like that. That's original music.
I found them!
Yay! And we're back. Thank you. Ah, you like my glasses? You too can go to any Acme and buy a pair of these. 3.5 power, baby. So, yeah, so here's the deal. So he lied about being in the sun. And I don't have a lot of issue with him going there, except for a few points I like to make. Why lie about you going to the beach with your family? And what do you do at the beach? You either go inside to get away from the sun or you're outside under the sun. So why be more of an ass and lie about being in the sun when a photographer, and this is a great side story, the photographer caught him on the beach because he was actually going out there later to do fireworks. So they actually had planned to take pictures of the beach because obviously it's one of the busiest beach days of the year. And he's done it historically throughout the years. And he figured, you know what? He called up the pilot and said, you know, let's just give it a pass and let's just see if we can catch the governor outside, you know, getting into his limo or getting out of his helicopter, et cetera. And much to his surprise that he's actually on his biplane, actually not a biplane, regular small plane, puts the window down with his long telephoto lens, sees him there. And they do a pass and he swing around and he and the pilot apparently, you know, this is he's been interviewed and spent in many, many articles. Look at each other like, holy crap, can you believe the timing of this? Especially since he said he was out there for only X amount of minutes. So the plane swings around, he puts the lens out and they go low and slow and he's looking right at him. And the photographer said, I have no doubt in my mind that he saw this lens because it protrudes out the window. I don't, you know, it's one of those lenses that's probably like, you know, 15 inches, 20 inches long. Because I'm sure he's got to be a good football field length, 100 yards off the shore, just even for safety reasons. And so there he is, sitting there in his chair. And that's cool, okay? But the reality is, why lie about number one? And number two, if you really are closing the state for the reasons that are plausible for you, for the opioid money that you're trying to earmark from Horizon, I should say, then why just stir the pot? Why wouldn't you just stay in your nice, nice, plush, lavish home in Northwest Jersey? And don't give yourself special dispensation because you are the governor. Yes, you have the right to be there. Yes. But you know, it's just the tens of thousands of people who would have been there over the weekend. You know, I think it's just the ultimate in being a hypocrite. And that's what he's known for. And I think he's just righteously hypocritical all the time. He lied about being in the sun, et cetera. And I understand, listen, that's his job as governor to meet a budget. And for this is his eighth budget that he had to meet. And he's not alone in terms of being inflexible, the Democrats, et cetera. But the Democrats should have known that he's a bull in a china shop, that he was not going to relent. And you know what? Lose a few of the lines that he was going to cross out when he vetoed them, and we'd get him back next year. But the reality is, why jeopardize, you know, something? First of all, the pay of millions of state employees on Monday, and the rest of the enjoyment of family. But the reality is also, he's just trying to create his legacy, his opioid epidemic, which he's, you know, believe me, and this is a serious issue. I speak about drugs and alcohol, as you know, for our often listeners, schools, colleges, and corporations, and overcoming adversity, things of that nature. And opioids are huge. It's rampant. But the reality is, you're earmarking a hell of a lot of money, and you're doing this selfishly because you want to say to Trump, look what I'm doing, because Trump is something very, very similar on a national basis, because on his curtain call, he wants to walk right into Washington and say, Trump, now it's time to give me a job. Okay, I can't be with your son-in-law, but maybe I can handle the opioid national drug issue. So that's why he's doing this, and that's why he's beating his chest, et cetera, et cetera. So, and that's why he looks so incredibly funny. Doesn't he look like a huge 350-pound kid in that chair? He does. And I don't want to make fun of him because of his size, but I got to make fun of him because of his size. So excuse me. It's just, he just put himself out there, you know? Because, and you're in a position like that, that's it. So you know what? Let's get rid of the she shed. Let's get rid of the Chris Christie thing. And let's introduce someone of true worth. Crystal Woods, get over to the microphone.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Closer,
hello.
Closer. No, closer, closer, closer.
Okay, I'm close.
Yeah, you slide in. The microphone is your friend. Okay.
Okay.
Crystal Woods, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And looking at you and reading certainly about what you've overcome in life. It's just remarkable that you are the resilient person that you are, and that you have this innate ability to say, you know what, a lot of negative stuff, events happened in my life that I had no control over. But when the time came, you took the reins, and slowly over years, as you grew and matured, et cetera, you've grown into an incredible, fine human being that is not looking back too much, except for obviously writing your memoir. So welcome to the show, Crystal Woods.
Thank you.
It wasn't easy for you. All these years, struggling with, we're going to give our listeners a little background here. At age six, your parents were married for how many years?
Seven.
7 years. So relatively, so I'm going to push that microphone again. Get closer to it. There we go. There we go. So at age six, your parents were married for 7 years, and they got divorced or separated.
They did.
What kind of marriage and relationship was there between you and your mom, and your mom and your mom and her husband at the time, your father?
My mom and I were close. I was little. I was a mommy's girl. My father and mother, volatile at best, I would think. I'm sure they had a few good years, but she was quite young and he was much older.
Was there any physical abuse on your mom? Do you know?
I don't know that he ever hit her. I never saw it, but he was abusive. He was. She left him and took me and went to court and got custody. He got visitation. And then he kidnapped me at six.
How did this happen? Were you actually at home? Was your mother?
I was at home with my mother, and he had court-ordered visitation. So she had no control over that. Had she fought it, she would have went to jail. That mm-hmm. would have defeated the purpose. So she was abiding by court orders, and he came to pick me up for the weekend. And you can get pretty darn far within 48 hours. So he brought me to Texas, where I grew up mostly.
And at that time, you were living in Arizona with your mom.
Correct.
When you were kidnapped.
Correct.
So what did you think? Did he say to you, listen, I'm taking you away from your mom. She's not good. What kind of talk was there? Or was like, oh, that's okay. We're going to go on a little trip. We're going to have some fun, Crystal.
You know, the best I remember is I didn't want to go, actually. I told my mom, I said, I don't want to go. Daddy's going to steal me. I don't know if it was I was intuitive. I don't know if I overheard a conversation, but I didn't want to go. I packed my bags. I went, and this is my father, so, you know, things are supposed to be okay, but just I didn't want to go.
Something felt off, though.
It did. He never really explained what we were doing. We just went to Texas, and you're with your father, so it's okay.
Sure, of course.
You know, you ask about mommy, and I don't remember what he told me, to be honest. But I was with dad, so it was okay. And the sexual abuse started quite early, age six, as a matter of fact.
This is before the separation?
After.
After, okay.
After.
So when he had visitation, that's when it began?
No, once we went to Texas, once he kidnapped me, is when it began. And even at age six, you know something's not right. It doesn't feel right. You don't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. But you're told that things are done for your own good. And, you know, you're brainwashed at that age. I was put into school under an alias, Sandy Riggs. It was one cousin's first name and another cousin's last name. And
sounds like a mystery novel name. And Sandy Riggs walked into the room with a caliber in her hand.
Yes. And I went to school, seemingly happy, healthy, little girl, no problems. I never told anybody anything. I was prepped not to have conversations. I was very outgoing, always very social, little butterfly. Did good in school, so there were no questions, no problems. I don't know how he got documents. I don't know how he took me to the doctor and such. Back then, things were more lax.
Mm-hmm. Sure, different world.
Absolutely.
Was he employed?
He was. He was a construction worker, so he would get work no matter where he went. And he was a very good con artist. His stories were good, and he would, you know, the woe is me, my wife was horrible, and she, you know, she tried to take my child, and people sided with him.
Hmm. So he had empathy on his side.
Absolutely.
And here's a cute, bubbly, adorable little six-year-old, maybe on the cusp of being seven at that age. And that, of course, you see your parents as a rock.
Right.
They're Gibraltar. They can't do anything wrong. But
right.
Obviously, you kind of knew something's wrong. But then your father would cajole you and saying, this is okay.
Right.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm your dad and I love you. And this is what we're going to do.
Right. Exactly. And then, you know, you fast forward as you get older. 12 years old, was it 12? 12 years old, we came back. No, pardon me. 8 or 9 years old, we came back to Arizona. He went into the court system. I don't know, you know, to go to court. I don't know what was said, but he got off. The whole time we were chased by the police. They almost caught us a couple of times. And
so were you moving from Texas from location to location?
Yeah, yeah.
And what was the rationale then?
Your father would explain to you? None, really. I mean, at that age, it's just, you know, you go where your parents go.
Yeah, sure. Your father said, we're going to take another job. Yeah,
absolutely. I remember one time we were living in Arlington and we lived in condos, and he had given his sob story to the manager there at the condos. And we went for breakfast and we walked down the street to go. And as we were coming back, the police were in our condo and the manager waved their hands to let us know, leave, don't come back. So we did. We just up and left.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot for a child to take in, to experience.
It is.
And then he, was it on a, being so young, was it sort of like exciting though?
No. No, wasn't exciting. You don't build any roots. You don't stay in school long enough to have friends or go to parties.
Would he allow you to have friends?
He did at that age. Because, you know, I was just a little girl and it was just, you know, play dates or parties or stuff like that. But you don't really build relationships mm-hmm. with anybody. So at that age, he did let me have friends. When I got older, it became a little more complicated, a lot more complicated.
So let's talk about those complication times. I imagine puberty played a role.
As I got older, I started asking more questions and I got a little gutsier. He was always very, I always describe him as the devil incarnate. And I don't mean that everybody thinks, you know, somebody's bad, but he was really bad. I was not the first person he ever abused.
You don't have to convince me.
So as I got older, I got gutsier. When everything really kind of came to a head is when I was 15. And he gave me an ultimatum. He says, you know, you give me sex 3 times a week and you can come and go as you please. And I kind of said, you know, F you. And he was leaving for coffee. And he said, well, if you're here when I get back, I'm going to kill you. And he would have. He always slept with a gun under his pillow. And many a night I would lie awake thinking, should I reach for it and just blow his brains out? But I never had the courage because he would have caught me. And I, at that time, didn't fully know how to operate a gun. So I left, and he reported me as a runaway, and I got caught, and they took me back to him, and I didn't want to go.
He reported you. Now, he has a fictitious name and alias, and so do you. That's why it didn't come up in the database?
He didn't, no. No, he didn't.
So how could he report if he's on the run?
Pardon me. While he was on the run, yes, he did. Sean Riggs. But this, we were no longer on the run at this point when I was 15. He had been cleared, exonerated of everything.
How is he exonerated?
I don't know.
When he kidnapped someone for 5, 7 years?
I don't know. Back then, things were different. He walked into court. I don't know what he said. I wasn't there.
Have you researched and I mean, it's public record what he was charged with and why he was released?
No.
Are you curious?
I never looked it up. For that part, no.
For your book?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's a big part of the puzzle we'd like to find out because, I mean, you know, is there a hole in the judicial system?
Oh, back then, definitely.
Just, I mean, the law is the law. I don't think the law would have changed. I mean, kidnapping is kidnapping. I mean,
true.
Look at Patty Hearst's story in the 70s.
Right.
Anyway, so he came back and you were gone from
right.
coffee.
Right. So this is when I was 15. So this is many, many years later. So he came back. I was gone. He reported me as a runaway. I was on the run for about a week. My boyfriend had hid me. And I got caught. And the police took me to a holding cell and gave me back to him. Now, he had taken pictures, horrible, inappropriate pictures that I tried to find that he had hidden. I couldn't find them. The police thought that I was just a teenager.
Teenagers making up stories?
Yeah, making up big
stories. So you told them about the inappropriate pictures?
I did.
And what about the abuse?
I did. And I couldn't find the pictures. He had moved them from where I knew they were. And they just thought that I was a bad kid, that I was lying about my parent, and I just wanted my way, and that was
it. To do and say anything to keep away from your father.
Right.
Yeah.
But
and you had no physical marks to show them?
No. No. He, no. I was terrified of juvenile hall. I had had friends in high school that had ended up there, and I heard horrible stories. So the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. So I shed crocodile tears. He was going to take me to juvie when the police took me back to him. So I shed crocodile tears to not go to juvenile. And I stayed with him for another year before he essentially went to prison for pulling a gun on the boyfriend that was hiding me while he was hiding me because he was trying to find me.
So he didn't go to prison for kidnapping you for years, but pulled out a weapon that probably wasn't registered, et cetera, and went to jail.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe he broke his parole or something of that nature with the gun.
Well, he wasn't on parole. He had no charges. No.
This is really puzzling.
No, he got no charges for anything against me. But when he was looking for me while I was on the run, he saw my boyfriend out in public. He pulled a gun on him in public. And that's essentially what got him put in prison.
So many people, unfortunately, you're not the first person to experience such horrific lifestyle with a parent, mental and physical and sexual abuse. And the biggest question is, why don't you run? And I know this and you know this, but for a lot of listeners that don't understand the capacity to control someone, their destiny, especially when you're 13, 12, 10, 7, 6 years old, is alarming. I mean, they are your life. They control you, and you are scared of them. Even as the nicer that you are, probably even is more controlling because you're thinking like, well, maybe it's me because why should I run away from something my father or mother that are so kind? If I only have to do X, Y, or Z, that's I don't think is right or appropriate sometimes.
I honestly think, not just for myself, but I think for a lot of people, it's one, the fear of, well, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? And two, it's even at age 6, it's what you know is always better than the unknown. And even when it's not something that you like, it's something that's painful. You don't know if what's on the other side is going to be more painful, so you stay.
Wow.
Until you just can't take it anymore.
And the uncertainty factor, because you think there's something wrong, but you're not exactly sure.
Right.
Again, you're not going out asking your fellow classmates at 7, 8
right.
years old, hey, does this happen? Does your dad come to your bedroom, or do you have to do things for your father, et cetera? So it's just one of those things that you pocket away. You can compartmentalize. And how many years afterwards did you have to open all those doors to let everything out to heal?
I always have. I've always...
How?
I don't know.
By talking about it?
I've healed because I've always been willing to talk about it. Abuse, whether it's child or a grown adult being abused. Abuse is a dirty little secret that people... that's how people look at it because that's how a lot of people are treated. That's how society thinks of it. If somebody says, I was abused mentally, emotionally, sexually... There's a stigma attached to it that's put on the person who was abused. And I don't like to say victim because I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor. And so people don't like to talk about it. I have always talked about it at a very young age. I've never been ashamed of what happened to me because it wasn't my choosing. And I never looked at what happened to me as poor woe is me. A lot of people, when you tell them, they'll say, oh, I'm so sorry. No. Please, don't be sorry. My life is my life. I can't change it. So what do? You pull whatever silver lining from it that you can, and you run with it. So what is my silver lining? One, I think, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, for me, I had to go through what I did because it's my purpose in life to help people with it. The other thing is just... I don't know. Child abuse it's a very difficult thing, and it happens to more people than they realize. Everybody has been abused to some point or another, whether it's emotional, sexual, or physical. But people don't want to talk, and somebody has to help them. And the more people are willing to talk, the more that's going to happen, and the stigma will go away. So that's why I'm here today. That's why It's always been my purpose and my passion. I've just haven't realized it yet. I haven't made it come to fruition.
Well, you're doing a great job about it, that's for sure. I mean, the fact that you're out articulating exactly what happened to you, and you know, and no one would knock you not for doing something that's so close to, you know, who you are, the DNA of your makeup. I mean, your family, your core of your, you know, the nuclear being of your existence. And you don't have siblings, correct?
Not full siblings. I have a brother and a sister that we share a mother. And then I have six or five, I don't even know, on my, I call him my sperm donor. My sperm donor side. I met two of them, boys. The girls I never met. I know their names. I don't know them. He was also abusive to some of the other kids in the past. And
now, this is your father when they adopted kids when you were young?
No, he was previously married.
Ah.
Yeah. So wow. Another mother.
So have you opened up with these?
I haven't. Don't know how to find them.
Do you think they had aliases as well?
No, not at all. No.
Your mom certain of that?
My mom?
Yeah.
Well, they have different mothers.
But she would still probably have documentation, though.
My mom,
then.
No. My mother has nothing of my father.
You're talking about silver linings. Well, that's possibly one major silver lining, is that you didn't have other siblings. That maybe in one regard you think of, well, it could have been a way of having comfort and talking to each other, and maybe both of you, or whether it was a brother and a sister or two sisters or brothers, whatever the makeup would be, could have absconded and left and escaped.
Right.
But the other side of the coin, which is more the glass half full, is that they didn't have to experience this as well.
Right.
So that's a major silver lining.
It is.
So now going a few years into, you were saying when you were 15 or so, obviously your body's developing, you're having a menstrual cycle, so you're able to get pregnant. Was he taking precautions?
As far as I know, he was not able to have kids anymore at that point. Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
What kind of background do you know of him as a child? Was he the youngest of many kids?
He was the youngest of four girls. I don't know much, actually. I never met his parents. Like I said, he was much older than my mother.
By how many years?
15 and 37. So quite a bit.
Mm, absolutely. I
never met his parents. They were long since passed. His sisters, because we were on the run for years, I wasn't close with any of them except for one. She introduced me to music and learning instruments and things of that nature. And they had actually, when we came back from Arizona, back from Texas, my Aunt Shirley had asked me questions if anything had ever happened. And everybody was terrified of him. And I said yes. And she tried to help, but nothing ever came of it, really. So I didn't get to know them too much. And they're all deceased now.
This is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Crystal Woods is my guest. She's telling a remarkable story, ultimately how she became a fitness professional and has her own company, or multiple companies, I should say. And she's sharing with us about her story of abuse starting at age six, sexually abused by her father. So now you go back to Arizona. Was there one specific point where there was a big reveal when you were reunited with your mom and you were able to say, this is what's been happening, this is where I've been? And did your mom tell you how many years she was looking for you and how she was looking for you? And
So right before my father gave me an ultimatum and I left and he reported me as a runaway, I had my grandmother in my life for quite a few years after we came back from Texas. I never told my grandmother everything that was going on. I don't know why. I never did. I assume she may have known. I'm not sure.
This is the grandmother on which side?
My mother's. I'm very close with my grandmother. My grandmother was there in the absence of my mother for many a year. So I was very close with her. But before the big blow up with my father that brought everything to a head, my grandmother, we had found my mother. Nobody knew where she was because she was terrified of him also. as divine intervention would have it, my stepfather, who's my father now, was in town. They lived in New Mexico, or no, they lived in Colorado at the time. We found my mother, and my grandmother took me out there to go see her, and for a weekend. And I really would have loved to have gone and lived with her, and she wanted me to, but I told her no. She had my sister and my brother. They were very small at the time. My brother was still in diapers, and I was 15. And I told my mom I couldn't go live there. And the reason was because when I told my father I wanted to, he said, if you do, I'll burn their house down with everybody in it. And I never told anybody that until...
This is before he went back into jail?
Yeah. Well, this is before he went to jail.
Went to jail. Yeah. For the first time. That's right.
Yeah. So I never told anybody because...
You were scared.
No, that was my battle to fight. I couldn't let somebody get hurt, to get killed for me.
Wow. That's a major decision to make and to live with at for 15 years of age. I mean, all these years, for 8 years right then, you've been experiencing horrific, horrific events in life. And here you are, you know, almost free here, but he still has his clutches on you.
Right. But at 15, when you've grown up like that, you're no longer an innocent, naive 15-year-old.
Sure.
So you've aged beyond your years, so... You have the ability to make that decision. Should I have maybe told somebody? Sure. But that could have caused a lot more devastation.
But had you told your mom at that point exactly what took place throughout those years?
We didn't have that conversation that weekend. No, we didn't. I'm sure she knew, because she knew what kind of a man he was. That's why she left.
How did that embrace feel?
I really missed my mother. I am my mother. So that makes
me
teary. They say that a child develops and gets everything that it needs for who it's going to become by the age of 6. I had my mother to the age of 6. So everything that I needed to become who I would be and to survive my life was instilled in me by her before. So she was always my rock, even when she wasn't there.
So was there ever a moment when the heart-to-heart came and you actually sat down, spelled out exactly what happened? Or
there was.
How many years later?
Well, let's see. After my grandmother took me out there at 15 and I refused to go live with her, we lost contact again because he went to prison. I went to go live with my aunt. That did not work out. That woman I couldn't stand, and I became a ward of the court. She gave me to the court system. So you get put into a shelter for girls, and then you go to a group home for girls. And I ran away from there at 17, 16 and a half. I couldn't do it.
Who can blame you?
So I left, yeah, and I made my way.
How did you make your way?
You know, you stay with friends. You get a job. Nobody really questions you. I had ID. I had a birth certificate. So you get a job. You stay with friends. You do what you have to do.
So did you have any boyfriends back then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So was sex something that you didn't have a lot of... respect for, or was it just something that was just like commonplace in your personality?
No, sex. Some people, when they've been abused, they'll use sex as a tool, and others can't have a functional sex life at all.
Sure.
I think I was lucky in the fact that I've always been okay with that. I've always had a healthy sex life. I've never used it as an instrument, so to speak, to get what I want. I looked at my abuse differently than I did my personal sex life that I chose.
Oh, well, they are, sure, completely different. But
right.
I imagine intimacy is intimacy, and certainly they can be very segregated. But I imagine at certain times you couldn't help but to have maybe flashbacks or certain intrusive thoughts, because, I mean, your brain wanders and you can't control things of like that, and it becomes emotional. And especially when you're with the right person and it feels so good, when it was happening to you for all those years when it was inappropriate and far from right.
Right. I never did experience that. I didn't. Honestly, the hardest times for me was never during the day. Night times were always harder. Because that's a lot of times when he would sneak into my room and I would pretend to be asleep and he would touch me and I would like flail like I didn't want to be touched to make him go away. Mm-hmm. And I would refuse to wake up, so to speak. And a lot of times he would go away. Sex life in my teen years, no. I had no problems with thoughts during intimacy. I don't know if it's because of the way that I handled things through my years. Even in junior high, I spoke about what happened to me with my very close girlfriend. And she had problems at home also. So even though we weren't being rescued or we weren't getting out of our situations, we were still talking and it was still getting out. It wasn't getting buried deep down inside. So once I finally was free, any intimacies that I had, I was in the moment with that person, and no thoughts or flashbacks intruded.
That must have played a vital role, because remarkably, you're so, I guess, healthy is the right word, healthy for experiencing traumatic events that you have. I mean, we've read about these stories, and maybe you have, and you've heard of them, and you don't need to read about them, but I mean, of people being victimized and by their father and or parents for years and kept in basements and
these
terrific, ugly things that you couldn't even possibly make up happen to people. And the consequences, lifelong consequences, are, you know, damaging. And sometimes there are many, many ramifications, drugs, alcohol, multiple kids themselves, repetition of abusive relationships,
yes.
Suicide. I mean, there's count or death. They take out their parents, and who could dispute any of those? Because, you know, to be tortured in any circumstance of that umbrella is just, you know, unthinkable. So there you are as a teenager, and is that when you met your husband?
No. Well, my ex-husband.
Yes. Well, we'll introduce the ex part. We got to introduce the husband first.
Say that again.
So you met your soon-to-be husband at what age?
Well, the gentleman that I am currently with, we met 5 years ago. And in the gym. And he's a trainer. And that's when I got into fitness. My previous husband, he and I were together for 17 years.
And you met him at what age, previous husband?
22, yeah.
And that felt right.
It was.
And he was empathetic and understanding of happened? And
oh, yes. I've always been very forthcoming with people about my past. Because just because I handle things very well, it's not to say that I didn't come out unscathed. I am the way I am with certain things because of being abused. I don't agree with, you know, gentlemen's clubs. I think those are completely inappropriate. And that probably has something to do with the way I was brought up. I used to be very, very un-okay with nudity just on TV. Certain things just bothered me, and that had to do with my insecurities. I did have insecurities. Because of my abuse and because of my upbringing. But I would never show that outwardly. Mm. I always had on a mask of total confidence and, you know, total, very outgoing. I was never introverted. So I did have little quirks about me because of it.
Completely understandable.
But because of fitness and getting, I guess, back to me, I no longer have those. And I really do attribute the way I am, I don't want to say strength, because everybody has strength, but everybody handles it a little differently.
Well, yes, they do. But I think it's obviously strength is immeasurable. But I think that, you know, people within many, many circles of your life that are not that strong. I know many people who are not that strong, and I know people who think I'm the strongest person they know, and I know people who I think are 10 times stronger than me. So I think it depends on upbringing.
Definitely levels.
Yes. How hard you push yourself in life, and I mean emotionally, and that could be physically as well. And I think the fact that we're going to get into this momentarily, and we're running out of time, I hate to say this, Crystal, but the fact that you got into and it saved your, I think, physical being and certainly a great mental outlet into the physical fitness world. You were in this marriage. It wasn't going that well after years, and it had a good run from what I understand. You and your husband both decided to quit smoking, not live a sedentary lifestyle. Let's go to the gym. And then things just progress and you break up and move on.
Right.
But that was a great way for you to also become physically strong, because mentally, there's no question you were mentally an Adonis, you know, from age 6 on, no doubt. But now your body's catching up because you have control of this. The mind is it's not easier said than done to control, but the body, you can, you know, to the a good extent of it, especially when we're younger, control how it looks and reacts, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. I had gotten very sedate in my lifestyle. I weighed 127 pounds. For me, that's fluffy weight because I'm not very big framed. And got in the gym, took off the weight, decided to compete. And that is a whole other comfort zone in and of itself. It takes a lot of courage to get up on that stage and put yourself on display for people.
Especially after what you've lived through.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, that's unfathomable. I mean, no one could blame you for saying, there's no way I could possibly do that. So I want to get back, again, we're short on time here, that you sat down with your mom and everything's been divulged. And how's your relationship with her now?
Good. Very good.
She understands. I mean, obviously, you didn't have to go into details with her what happened.
I did go into some details.
Oh, you did.
It was a very, you know, teary. It was a very, very emotional conversation, and she told me some of the things that she went through looking for me, night terrors and sweats and the whole nine yards. No mother should ever have to go through that.
That must have aged her like...
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. And it made her a tougher parent with my brother and my sister. And the silver lining I spoke of, I'm not a perfect parent by any means. I've made mistakes, but...
They don't exist.
What I went through also, I think, made me a better parent. It made me a more cautious human mm-hmm. being for today's society, which that prepared me very well. So for people out there that are being abused or have been abused, two big keys. One is talk about it. Two is to forgive. And that has to come in everybody's own time. You can't make somebody forgive. But anger and hate and all of that, it will eat you alive. And
oh, absolutely.
That continues to damage you and not your trespasser. So you have to forgive and let it go.
And it worked for you to work this out on your own. But for many people and many things in life, you have to seek help.
Yes.
A therapist, a trusted adult, someone of that nature.
Absolutely.
And did you ever get professional help, see a counselor?
I never did.
Wow.
No.
Any interest?
No.
No.
I honestly feel very healthy and fulfilled and in touch with what I went through and okay with it. And I forgave. I had a conversation with my father.
And on his deathbed?
No, before.
Oh, before.
And I forgave him, and he was at the birth of my son.
Wow.
I would never leave him if he was alive today with my children.
Of course, of course.
But forgiveness comes in action, not just in words. So he was there. Not the easiest thing in the world, but I forgave. I let go. I just never forgot.
And he died in what year?
2006 he died.
And, wow. You're pretty healthy about this. Your outlook about your father is pretty good, and that's respectable. I can't say that many people would be that way. Crystal Woods, a complete pleasure.
Thank
you're
you
You're an amazing
very
person.
Much.
And just tell me the name of your business.
My boyfriend and I, we both run a contest prep. It's Team Synergy, and I also run stage coaching, which is quarter turn posing.
Website is?
We're not on websites,
Facebook.
But we're all over Facebook. You can find me at Crystal Woods or on Instagram and Twitter as CBR Woods.
Thank you very much for your time, Crystal Woods. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, or corporation, check me out at markfarrellmotivation.com. Thank you. Bye-bye.